plus 10% stealth, plus 1% per 5 CL. Immune to morale failure. Plus 10% damage bonus against light-aligned players and NPCs. Plus 20% resistance to shadow damage. Access to Dark Templar and Shadowmancer restricted skills. Disadvantages. Race restricted. Wodes, Dokalfar, Excipitor. Dark alignment. Can use all weapons, can only specialize in blunt weapons skills. Cannot wear heavy armor. Shadowmancer spells have a high spirit cost. Weak against holy damage. Typical skill allotment. Dexterity. Attack strength is calculated as a rogue class. Intelligence. Increases spell strength. Spirit. Increases spirit supply.
I felt extremely optimistic after reading through the limited information I could get my hands on. And it was good to finally have some kind of idea where I should start sinking my attribute points. I quickly pulled up my character stats and decided to allocate the bulk of my undistributed points. I dropped 5 points each into Strength, Vitality, and Constitution, just so I wouldn't have a completely lopsided character. Then, 25 points into Dexterity, 25 into Spirit, and 20 into Intelligence. That left me 20 points in reserve, just in case I needed to tweak things after I finally meet with Chief Cole, who I assumed was my Shadow Pantheon trainer. I took a look at my character stats with my new skill allocations. I closed out the screen and brought up my skill section. Until I found Chief Cole, I couldn't access my specialized class skills and abilities, but there was still plenty I could do in the general skills department. Although I already knew most of the areas, heavy armor or bladed weapons, for instance, weren't going to factor into my character build, I decided to look through each and every tree, just so I'd have a solid idea of what kind of skills and abilities other players might have. After spending more than an hour reading through everything, I realized there would never be a standard build. There were just far too many skill and general specializations to choose from for that to ever be the case. Finally, I homed in on the skills that seemed pertinent to the Shadowmancer. First, I focused on blunt weapons, adding another point to Savage Blow, which had been a lifesaver more than once, and one more to Parry. Since I'd reached level 8 in blunt weapons, there were now several new skills available to me as well. I dropped 1 point into a passive ability called Trauma, which allowed all blunt weapon attacks to ignore 15% of an enemy's armor. I also put a point into a skill called Featherweight, which increased attack speed by 10% and critical hit by 2.5%. Unfortunately, medium armor didn't offer anything until I hit level 3, so I headed over to the stealth skill tree instead. I was a little reluctant to invest too many proficiency points into this tree without first acquiring my main class, but since the Shadow Dancer class came with a 10% bump to stealth, I figured stealth was going to be an important part of my overall game strategy, which meant my points wouldn't be wasted. And besides, at level 9, there were lots of cool extras to pick from. I immediately dropped 2 points into a passive ability called Whisper Step, which reduced the noise I made by 30%, making me much harder to detect while in stealth. 1 point went into an active technique called Camouflage, giving me a 20% better chance to blend in with my surroundings, even in bright lighting conditions. And 1 more went into Deadly Grace, reducing the weight of my armor, allowing me to be lighter and quicker on my feet. By the time I was done, I had to fight to keep my eyes open. So, I finally dismissed my player interface, offered a silent prayer for Abby, hoping I would wake up tomorrow morning with a PM from her, knowing I might not. And closed my eyes. I let the weight of my exhaustion draw me down, down, down into a restless sleep, filled with horrific, half-seen visions of Abby screaming, convulsing, dying, as fiery slabs of space rock peppered the earth. 23. Rise and shine. The shrill alarm exploded in my ears, clanging like a gong magnified by a bullhorn. I shot up and instantly began rubbing at my temples, trying to beat back the skull-splitting headache. It felt like Donkey Kong was trapped inside my head, desperately trying to smash his way free. I swung my legs off the bed and hunched forward, dropping my elbows onto my thighs as sweat cascaded down my face and my heart pounded sporadically in my chest. Everything was oddly blurry, and my lips and hands felt dull, numb. I wheezed, sucking in giant lungfuls of air, frantically trying to control my labored breathing.
Sophia, turn the alarm off.
I forced the words out between strained gasps.
Alarm dismissed,
Sophia replied calmly, unmoved by the fact that I was dying.
The current time in Eldgard is 7:15 a.m., she droned. You have been asleep for approximately 9 real-world hours. You have an automated message from the Ozmark Technologies customer support team. Would you like to play it?
In a minute, I slurred, which wasn't a good sign. The confusion and disorientation weren't nearly as profound as the day before, but the physical symptoms were 100 times worse. If I'd been back IRL, I would have called for an ambulance already. Currently, I was experiencing physical symptoms that related to both a heart attack and a stroke. But this was VGO, and I was well beyond the help of ambulance techs or modern medical treatment. Maybe I should try to find a priest or healer? No, I dismissed the thought. My HP bar wasn't affected by whatever was happening, which meant I was likely experiencing actual pain from my actual body. Theoretically, I had another day before my transition would be complete. Either that or I'd die. But this sure seemed like dying. I sat that way, bent over, struggling to breathe for a minute. Then 2, then 5, before the sensations finally began to recede.
Sophia, play the message!
I finally barked as my heart rate dropped to something sort of resembling normal.
Good morning, traveler, came an overly perky voice. This is Matthew, your customer support representative, and our system records indicate you've successfully spent your second full night in Viridian Gate Online. Congratulations! Since you're hearing this, I have some great news for you. Your overall chance of surviving the transition has increased from approximately 83% to nearly 90%. With that said, you're likely feeling extreme physical discomfort, but those symptoms are to be expected and should not be cause for concern. Make sure you stop by your nearest inn or tavern and eat a hearty meal. Thank you for playing.
The message faded. Died. I grumbled. Stupid Matthew. Intellectually, I knew poor Matthew was probably just some underpaid worker bee reading from a script per Ozmark Tech's instructions, but his naturally perky and energetic nature really made me want to punch him. I'm not a violent guy by nature, but just then I wanted to show him some extreme physical discomfort. Muttering disgruntled curses under my breath, I crawled from the bed, tossed on my armor and gear, then hit up the wash basin, splashing water across my face, trying to clear away a few of the cobwebs clogging up my brain. I grabbed the towel and patted at my eyes, which is when I remembered Abby. Frantically, I dropped the bit of damp cloth into the wash water, not caring, and pulled up my player interface.
Woo!
I shouted with a fist bump, startling a fat pigeon sitting on the ledge outside my window.
Hell yeah!
I yelled again, doing a victory jig, boots click-clacking on the wooden floors. I had a message from Abby. The subject head simply read,
I'm alive!
I pulled up the message, a giant grin running from ear to ear.
Personal message. Jack, I made it. I'm alive. I'd kiss you if you were here. Honestly, I feel awful. It's like someone dropped my insides in fire ants. No joking, this is the worst experience of my life. But I got a message from a customer service rep saying that's normal and that their systems indicate I've transitioned. I'm supposed to stay off my feet for the next couple of hours, but then Otto and I are off to the Grand Archive in Alawan Hills. It's basically a giant library over on the West Viridian side of the continent. If anyone's going to know about that seal we found, it'll be one of the lore masters at the archive. But I'm temporarily going dark. No wiki, no PMs, no in-game connectivity, since it'll be harder for Carrera and Osmark Tech to track me down. It'll be a couple of days until you hear from me again, but in the meantime, you get a class and grind out some more levels. Best, Abby.
With a sigh of relief, I pulled open the door and headed out. Cutter was waiting for me at the bottom of the stairs, leaning casually against the wall, his arms folded, his head back. He looked relaxed, at ease, but something was subtly off about him. Morning. Care to have breakfast with me? I asked.
Nah, he said with a shrug. Busy day today. Lots to do. I think it'd be best if we picked up something from the street vendors. Just about no better place to get questionable street food than Rowan Heath. A little fried rat on a stick is exactly what you need to set you straight this morning.
I paused and frowned, brow wrinkled. Fried rat? Was he being serious? After a second, I decided it wasn't a good idea to ask questions I didn't actually want answers to. He slung an arm around my shoulders when I reached the bottom of the staircase and gently guided me toward the exit. He smiled the whole time, trying to play it cool, but even in the short time that I'd known Cutter, I knew this wasn't normal. If I didn't know any better, I'd say Cutter was nervous. Except, Cutter wasn't the kind of guy to get nervous. Greedy? Yes, obviously. Sneaky? Without a question. Cocky? Probably his middle name. But not anxious. Despite my achy muscles and awful headache, I put on an easygoing grin as we walked. Didn't want to draw any extra attention in case something was up. We made it out of the Broken Dagger without being accosted, but the second we cleared the door, Cutter picked up his pace, quickly heading onto a busy thoroughfare, then weaving through a bustling crowd.
What's wrong?
I hissed at him, before glancing over my shoulder, expecting to see someone following us. Except, no one was.
In a minute,
he replied, dragging me past a rolling wagon and into a pool of deep shadow. He paused, tense, regarding the roadway, before urging me into motion. We moved with speed and purpose, though not so quickly to draw unwanted attention. 10 minutes and 15 switchbacks later, he finally slowed his manic pace, leading me over to a rickety wooden cart near an open fire pit with skewers of meat lazily spinning above the flames, greasy juices dripping down into the dancing fire. With a few muttered words, Cutter snagged us 5 or 6 spits of meat on a stick.
Sorry for the cloak and dagger shite,
he said, handing me a too-hot skewer. I regarded the seared meat. It did look an awful lot like rat. At this point, though, I was so hungry I didn't even care. I took a disgruntled bite, thinking about the honey porridge I could be eating at the Broken Dagger, but quickly revised my opinion. A buff popped up, alerting me that the rat skewer was restoring 50 HP over 35 seconds. But it hardly mattered because the meat was delicious. A little spicy, with the smoky flavors you only get when cooking over an open flame. Even better, my headache vanished almost at once, a wave of sweet relief cascading through my body. I finished the first skewer in a few wolfish bites and immediately started on a second one. I began to eat a third as I walked, trailing Cutter down a wide cobblestone street bordered mostly by narrow plaster-faced houses instead of shops, a residential section of the city by the look of it.
So, I prompted around a mouthful of rat meat. Care to tell me what that was all about?
The thief regarded me out of the corner of his eye.
There's something wrong with Gentleman Georgie, he said at last.
What do you mean there's something wrong with him? I thought he was gone on business or something.
I'm getting there if you give me a chance,
he replied with an eye roll.
Apparently, Georgie's been gone for almost a week, but he turned up earlier this morning. Naturally, I sought him out, wanting to tell him about the incident with Seth Rogg's Alcala, but there was something wrong with him, Jack. He looked like Georgie, identical down to the last detail, at least physically, but that man wasn't Georgie.
He paused, running a hand through his blonde hair, then rubbed at the back of his neck.
I'm sure of it.
In what way? I asked before taking another mouthful of rat meat.
It was just little things, I suppose, he replied. His mannerisms were slightly off. His eyes were hazy, distant. It's hard to put my finger on exactly, but in my gut, I know he's not the same. Georgie took me in after my father passed, taught me most of what I know about thieving and killing. The man was like family to me, and whoever I met today...
He shook his head, worry lingering in his eyes.
It wasn't him.
I nodded, trying to be supportive. We hooked a left onto another cobblestone boulevard, this one filled with robe-wearing Viridians and armor-clad travelers in a variety of stripes and races. This road held stone-fronted shops, edged with intricately carved wood and studded with large, shiny windows. I hadn't been here before, and I immediately felt out of place. These stores seemed far swankier than anything I'd seen so far. And the customers looked like the kind of people who could afford the finer things in life. Despite the few awesome items I'd acquired, I still sort of looked like a down-and-out drifter.
So what's the plan exactly? I asked, finally done with my rat skewers.
Do we kidnap fake Georgie? Try to dig some answers out of him, maybe?
Cutter shook his head, once more looking worried, frayed around the edges.
Honestly, I'm not sure what to do. If it was anyone else, I'd go to Georgie with my suspicions, but who can I go to about Georgie himself? He's at the top of the food chain. No one's going to believe me over him. And even if they do, no one would dare make any kind of overt move against him. That's a surefire way to end up in a ditch with your throat slit. And kidnap him?
He continued.
Nah. He's surrounded by covert bodyguards thick as flies in a shitter. Worse, I think not Georgie might be onto me. Until I can come up with some kind of plan, I don't think it's safe to head back to the Broken Dagger. Thought I might stick around with you for the time being, help you find a class while I think through things. Trying to come up with some options. Assuming it's all the same to you, of course.
A quest box popped up. Quest alert. Imposter Georgie. Cutter suspects that something is wrong with Gentleman Georgie, the unofficial head of the Thieves Guild in Rowanheath. Help Cutter get to the bottom of the mystery. Quest class. Unique. Personal. Quest difficulty. Hard. Success. Help Cutter get to the bottom of the mystery surrounding Gentleman Georgie's sudden personality change. Failure. Refuse to help Cutter or allow him to die before the mission is complete. Reward? Question mark. Accept. Yes? No.
How could I say no to you? I asked, sarcasm oozing through my teeth as I accepted the quest he'd just provided to me.
Precisely, he replied with a grin. My charm is rather irresistible. Besides, let's face it, you wouldn't survive a day without me. But still, thanks all the same,
he mumbled weakly, refusing to meet my eye. We walked for a few more minutes in relative silence.
Ah, here we are,
he said eventually, stopping and sweeping an arm toward a thickly carved wooden door. A sign above the building read, Trajan's Emporium. XXIV. The Emporium. I stared at Cutter, the question evident on my face, then shifted my gaze to the storefront.
If we're going to do any more strenuous adventuring, he said, it's time you properly equipped yourself. Sell off all that junk loading you down and pick up some nifty trinkets that might keep you breathing. This place,
he nodded toward the shop,
is a bit pricey, but assuming you can afford it, it's a one-stop shop for just about everything you'll need. Weapons, armor, potions, spells, whatever.
Without further comment, he shoved his way in, a tiny brass bell ringing out, announcing us to the shopkeeper. I followed, not sure what to expect. The inside of the Emporium looked like a cross between a posh antique store, a New Age bookstore, and a medieval armory. Expensive rugs and fanciful tapestries littered the floors and walls. Rows of bookshelves, laden with old tomes and rolled scrolls, lined the right wall. Dark wood tables, polished until they shone, were loaded down with glass vials and 100 different types of herbal ingredients, presumably used for potion creation or alchemy. A huge array of weapons and armor crowded the left-hand side of the shop. There were pole arms, axes, swords, and maces, some cheap and plain, but most covered with silver and gold runes or studded with precious stones. The armor was equally diverse and abundant. Black plate mail hung on training dummies while intricately tooled leather armor dangled from the walls. Helmets with horns or horseshoe crests decorated more tables, while boots sat neatly lined on the floor below the tables. And there were lots of other knick-knacks, too, like sturdy utility belts studded with pockets and pouches, or boot sheaths made to conceal an extra dagger. A ridiculously short man with phenomenally broad shoulders and a long, wispy beard waddled out of a storage room and toward a service counter near the back of the shop. He looked like a squat cube of muscle, and his steps were slow and plodding. A man built for power, not speed. A dwarf, then. His features weathered with age, his skin wrinkled like dried leather. He slipped behind the counter, only his head visible for a moment, before he clambered up onto something, maybe a stool or a chair, allowing him a clear view of the shop.
Welcome to Trajan's Emporium,
he grumbled, his voice gruff, a perfect match for his homely face.
The finest importer and exporter of all your adventuring needs.
He paused and squinted at us, lips transforming into a hard, thin sneer.
Cutter,
he said the name like a curse.
You know I don't buy your pinched goods, thief. Go to that fence of yours, Jorgen, Jensen, Yabser, whatever the hell their name is. You're not welcome here, you uncouth miscreant.
Trajan, Cutter said with a smile and a clap of his hands. Is that any way to greet an old friend, eh?
You sure are no friend of mine. You're a barbaric, foul-mouthed hoodlum, and you'll leave before I summon the guards and have you clapped in irons.
Cutter waved off the dwarf's protests and pulled me over to the counter.
Allow me to introduce a friend of mine, Grim Jack.
He stepped aside and waved at me with a flourish and a bow.
He's a traveler, new to our lands.
Then take him over to Poor John's and see him outfitted there.
The dwarf glowered, folding beefy arms across his chest in disapproval.
Nonsense,
Cutter said.
My friend is practically royalty.
His hand flashed beneath his leather armor, and in a blink, gold appeared in his hand. Cutter dropped the pile of glittering coin onto the glowing wooden countertop with a subtle clink, clink, clink.
The dwarf's eyes bulged, staring at the gold with hungry greed.
"And that's only the tip of the iceberg, Trajan,"
Cutter said, one eyebrow cocked. The dwarf leaned in.
"How much gold are we talking about, you unwashed filth?"
he whispered, though not so quietly that I couldn't hear him.
"His nickname on the street is Grimjack Moneybags,"
Cutter replied with a shifty wink in my direction. Suddenly, the dwarf was all smiles and bows, issuing a host of profound apologies and hasty welcomes.
"Please, good sir, come and peruse my wares. I have the absolute finest goods in all of Rowanheath, the absolute finest."
Hesitantly, I meandered toward the dwarf. A pop-up inventory window appeared before me as I drew up to the counter. The dwarf's inventory floated on the left while mine floated on the right. I quickly scanned over the dwarf's goods and nearly choked at the prices. Not because they were high, but because they seemed rather low. I'd made out pretty good yesterday, even after paying the mercenary warlock. I'd walked away with a little over 2,200 in gold, and that wasn't counting the items I still had left to sell, which would probably bring in another 300 gold. But even the most expensive items the dwarf had to sell didn't cost more than a paltry 20 gold. Mentally, I pulled up a game wiki, trying to figure out how much a gold coin could get you in VGO. It didn't take long before I found a page with a table laying out how VGO coinage compared to real-world currency. Each copper coin corresponded to roughly $1, and there were 10 coppers per silver and 10 silvers per gold, which meant each gold coin was roughly equivalent to 100 IRL dollars. That meant after I finished selling off the items I'd acquired, I'd have damn near a quarter of a million in my account. That was more money than I'd ever dreamed of seeing back in my old life. Suddenly I felt faint, my legs weak, my arms shaky. I was rich. Well, relatively speaking, but certainly rich-ish. Despite everything else that had happened, I found myself grinning like a maniac. Time for something I'd never been able to do IRL, an impulse shopping spree. First, though, I needed to get rid of all the junk weighing me down. I pawned the ranger's bow with its plus 10 to dexterity and 10% increased chance to evade, netting me 175 gold. The short sword with the plus 1 strength modifier and the heavy fire steel gauntlets brought me in another 120. The other items, a crappy assortment of starter weapons and shoddy armor, brought in a small bag full of silver. More importantly, though, selling those items relieved me of some significant deadweight. With that done, I started combing through the dwarf's wares. I already had a bunch of health, stamina, and spirit regen potions, so I focused instead on filling in my missing armor items. Assuming Cutter was on the level and the dwarf's wares really were the best I could find at the moment, I still knew it was likely lowbie crap. Even though I was something of a casual gamer, at least compared to some of my hardcore friends, I knew you only got the really good drops from raids or off-the-player auctions. Still, I was in desperate need of gear, so this was better than nothing. After a little strenuous haggling with the dwarf, I picked up a pair of medium armor gauntlets, superior, a belt of agility, which granted me plus 7 to dexterity and also allowed me 7 quick access slots, and a helm of the owl, which increased my knight eye ability by 15%. That ran me 11 gold in change, not even a drop in the bucket, though the dwarf seemed pleased as punch, despite the fact that I'd talked him down by nearly half. My knight-blessed armor and gavel of shadows were way better than anything the dwarf had on display, but my little wooden buckler was desperately in need of an upgrade. I sold it for a measly 2 silver, but quickly replaced it with a bronze buckler that increased block chance by 10% and doubled my total block amount from 25 points of damage to 50. Another 5 gold down the drain, which I considered a laughably small amount considering that shield might prevent someone from splitting my head in two. I already had two rings equipped, but I still had six more ring slots available, not to mention two earring slots and two bracelet slots. Most of the jewelry was crap, generic plus one items not worth spending any money on. But I did find one ring, called the Scholar's Signet, with a plus five to spirit and a plus six to intelligence, which I snatched up in a heartbeat, even though the dwarf flatly refused to drop the price. The little band of iron practically screamed Shadowmancer at the top of its lungs, and somehow the dwarf seemed to know I wasn't going to pass on the item. A real huckster, that one. The rest of the gear was subpar, but there were still a few essentials I needed badly. I closed out of the dwarf's gear menu and headed over to his arcane wares. He had a variety of tomes and scrolls obviously designed for wizards and priests. Fireball, Ice Spike, Lesser Binding, Power Ward, Barrier. But nothing that catered to my end of the spectrum. Not that I actually expected to find anything. Since Dark Templar was one of the few classes requiring practitioners to actively seek out a trainer, I'd already come to terms with the fact that I wouldn't find anything in the normal stores. That was fine, though, because the dwarf did have what I'd been looking for. At the bottom of his inventory, he had a Tome of Return, a permanent spell allowing the caster to teleport to their bind spot, so long as they weren't in battle or surrounded by hostiles. That would be the broken dagger in my case. In light of Cutter's suspicions, however, I'd have to figure out how to get that changed. Truthfully, though, I couldn't really think of any other place that'd be better. Though I'd been playing the game for two solid days, I didn't really know much outside the broken dagger. Another worry to add to the list. Last, I headed over to the miscellaneous items and grabbed a camp set, which amounted to a small tent, a cook pot, and a fire starter kit. Then picked up some rations, water, bread, cheese, cold mutton. By the time I was done, my coin supply had dropped by another 22 gold, leaving my fat coin purse virtually untouched. Assuming Aliejo Carrera or his cronies didn't disembowel me, I was really going to have to thank Abby again. Business done, I closed out of the buy menu and took a moment to equip my new gear. I certainly didn't look all that heroic yet, but I felt much better. Then, before closing out of my interface, I toggled over to the Tome of Return and selected it. Using this item will destroy it, permanently removing it from your inventory. Are you sure you would like to learn Tome of Return? Yes, I said to the empty air. There was a pop and a flash of light, a small tornado swirling around me in a rush of warm air. Skill, Conjuration. Conjuration is one of the nine branches of magic. Abjuration, Enchantment, Divination, Divinus, Conjuration, Transmutation Alchemy, Invocation, Illusion, Light, and Dark. Conjurers are masters at manipulating, distorting, and transforming the astral fabric. Using their power, they may manifest astral energies, summon creatures and other beings through the ether, or rend the astral fabric in order to travel great distances in a single step. Skill type, level. Passive, level 1. Cost, none. Effect. Casting cost for spells in the conjuration school are reduced by 2%. I shook my head, dismissing the notification. Cutter was leaning on the counter, picking his fingernails with the tip of his knife.
Good?
He asked, cocking an eyebrow. Good as I'm gonna be. Now, let's go see some swamp folks.
XXV Storm Marshes. I stepped through a shimmering portal and directly into a fetid puddle of ankle-deep water bordered by boggy, squishy marshland. The cloudy sludge, oddly warm, immediately rushed into my boots, swirling between my toes, bringing a grimace to my face.
Ew,
Cutter remarked as he followed me into the pool with a squishy splat. He paused, looking left, then right.
What an awful place,
he grumbled, continuing his scan of the area. So far in my brief relationship with Cutter, there wasn't a lot I could agree wholeheartedly with him on. But for once we had common ground. Wet, squishy, disgusting common ground. At my core, I was a city boy, far more familiar with the back streets of LA than the backwoods of anywhere. So this place put me well outside of my comfort zone. Something large, green, and covered with eyes buzzed by my face before vanishing into a swatch of gnarled trees protruding from the water.
Yuck.
I turned in a slow circle. Splat squish. Splat squish. Surveying the thick warren of trees and waterways stretching off in every direction. We were in a mangrove swamp. A tangle of dense vegetation surrounded us on every side, a host of fat roots plunging into the water. The leafy canopy overhead blocked out the sunlight, casting everything in perpetual gloom and deep shadow. After filling Cutter in on my class quest, we'd headed over to the Mystica Ordo, VGO's version of a wizard's guild, and I'd paid a sorcerer to port us to the edge of the Akhani-controlled territories in the Storm Marshes. I'd expected to end up on the edge of a village or outside the gates of a Merc-Elf city. I hadn't been planning on stepping into a gloomy bog with no sign of human habitation. Anywhere.
Perfect,
Cutter uttered again.
This is exactly the way I wanted to spend my day off, chomping around in nature's version of a toilet.
Yes, perfect.
I waved off his objection as I pulled up my user interface and checked my map. This place was obviously in the middle of nowhere, but thankfully, a quest marker populated, giving me a rough idea of which way we needed to head. I turned, rotating slowly until I was facing the marker, then dismissed my interface. The section of swamp directly in front of me didn't look any different from the rest of the boggy wetlands. But that was our heading. This way, I said, setting off. My pace drastically slowed by the treacherous mud sucking at my boots. Every step was a tremendous effort. I took the lead, checking my map every few minutes to keep my bearings, while Cutter trailed behind, grumbling disgruntledly with every single step. The walk was torturously sluggish, the endless minutes filled with sludgy goop and a never-ending swarm of biting insects, constantly circling my head like planets orbiting a sun. Their bites and stings didn't actually deplete my HP bar, but they were still irritatingly painful. And it seemed like no matter how many I swatted with bug paste, there were always replacements ready to fill the void. After 20 or 30 minutes of hard trekking, we reached a little spit of land extending into the water. Finally, a small break. Not that moving onto land did anything about the awful bugs. If anything, the swarms intensified. A cloud of black, buzzing bodies so thick it was a challenge to see through. It came as an immense relief when the annoying critters finally thinned into a tolerable trickle 10 or 15 minutes later. The shift came as the marsh gave way to a more traditional forest, full of twisted oaks, creeping ferns, and squat palm trees with broad-leafed fronds. The ground here was still muddy, but a spattering of dead leaves and old, decaying vegetation made it a little easier going. I checked my map again, once more readjusting my position, angling slightly left, then pushed on, deeper into the wood, Cutter following sullenly at my back. We saw our first signs of genuine habitation a few minutes later. Unfortunately, it wasn't human habitation. Thick swatches of silver webbing decorated tree branches and trailed down from the dense canopy above, snarling birds and fat low-flying insects. Maybe there was a good reason the annoying swarms had let us be. This place looked like certain death incarnate. The webbing even coated the ground in areas, huge patches of silver covering yawning holes gouged into the earth.
You sure this?
Cutter swept an arm toward the expanse of webs.
Is the right way to go?
I nodded and pulled out my warhammer, borrowing courage from the comforting weight of the weapon.
Yes, obviously. Of course it is.
Cutter replied with a shake of his head while he drew dual daggers, giving each a nervous spin.
Well, let's just get it done, eh?
I nodded again, resuming our trek. At first, the forest was strangely silent. No chirping birds, no chittering squirrels, just the sound of our muted footfalls on damp earth, the occasional leaf crunching or twig snapping. As we got deeper, though, beyond the point where we could head back for the mangrove swamp, I heard a soft but persistent rustle. The sound of sandpaper sliding over a piece of fabric. The sound of a fall breeze stirring a pile of dead leaves. That noise put my teeth on edge, set the hairs lining my neck to stiff attention. There was definitely something here with us. And, despite seeing nothing, it wasn't hard to guess what it was.
Stealth,
I whispered over my shoulder to Cutter.
Maybe try to slip away while we still can and find a different way.
Yeah, stealth,
he replied, barely constrained fear creeping into his voice. I immediately dropped into a crouch, subconsciously activating my stealth. But instead of blurring into the shadows, a notification appeared.
Stealth failed. You are being directly observed by hostile parties.
I gulped and shared an uneasy look with Cutter.
I failed. You? Same,
he said, uncharacteristically terse. So much for that plan. The rustling increased with every passing minute. At one point, something flashed by on my right, a blur of movement too quick to follow. I spun, eyes flicking over the creepy web-strewn forest, but whatever had been there was long gone, vanished back into the deep shadows cast by the canopy. I did notice, however, that the path we'd just come through was now crisscrossed by thick strands of silvery silk, barring our way back. I gulped, a nervous twitch running through my hand. But at this point, we could only move forward.
What do you think? They haven't attacked yet?
Cutter asked, his voice a low whisper, his eyes constantly roving.
They're afraid, maybe?
I offered weakly, knowing that was pretty implausible.
Keep telling yourself that,
he replied, dropping into a low crouch, ready to move in any direction.
I've got a bad feeling about this, Grimjack.
The rustling increased until it was an almost constant background drone, the noise scratching at my ears, and as the noise grew in intensity, so too did the flashes of movement. Just a half-seen glimpse of long arachnoid legs, a bulbous belly, or the glint of a dark eye. We were being stalked and hunted. A truly unnerving sensation that left me increasingly on edge. The tension mounting in the air, the promise of swift and sudden violence to come, was worse by far than just having something leap out at me.
Just attack us already!
I finally yelled, my challenge bouncing off the trees, then dying, swallowed by the thick shrubbery. Nothing responded. But that rustling almost sounded like laughter now. The spidery freaks were mocking us. That had to be it. Or maybe the paranoia was starting to get to me. Eventually, we broke through the claustrophobic tangle of trees and webs, emerging only to find an enormous concave pit set into the forest floor. The colossal divot was as big around as a subway tunnel, and covered with layer after layer of thick webbing. Towering trees, old, dark, twisted things, ringed the pit, and dangling from the mammoth branches high above were silken cocoons, some the size of small forest animals, skunks or raccoons, while others were easily as large as a full-grown man. The rustling seemed to build to a crescendo, the trees shaking and pulsating with the sound, but I still couldn't see our enemies. Quickly, I pulled up my area map and immediately felt my stomach sink. This was a marked location, similar to a dungeon. The marker read, "Loeth the immortal orb weaver of Hellweb Hollow." Which is why it didn't surprise me at all when the ground started to quiver beneath me, as something giant dragged itself from the center of the pit. A pair of enormous legs came first, long black things with too many joints, covered in bristling red hairs. More legs joined the first two, followed in short order by an enormous head the size of a slug bug, with about 1,000 gleaming eyes and a set of barbed fangs, more closely resembling swords than teeth. After a second, more legs broke into the air, clawing at the silk like monstrous fingers before the rest of the body finally pulled free. The creature flexed its legs and stood, its terrible head affixed to a ginormous black thorax tattooed with looping swirls of neon red, which pulsed with uneasy light. As the massive Spider Queen finally emerged, the ceaseless rustling around us seemed to shift and strengthen as a flurry of brown forms appeared between the trees or repelled from the canopy above on fat strands of silk.
"Well done, my children,"
the nightmarish uber spider bellowed. Her voice was like the drone of an entire colony of wasps, though there was a decidedly feminine quality to it.
"These two will make a fine hatchery for the new wave of young ones,"
she buzzed. The spiderkin encircling us broke into jubilant celebration at her declaration, many raising their frontmost limbs high into the air, while others rubbed their rear legs together, the source of that terrible rustling. Like crickets, only way, way bigger and way, way grosser.
"Catch them,"
the queen buzzed.
"String them up, but keep them alive. The younglings will need living flesh and hot blood to feast on when they hatch."
The spider jubilation continued for another moment, growing in fervent intensity, and then, suddenly, the first spider broke, charging us from the left with an inhuman and inarticulate screech. The rest followed, crashing toward us like a tsunami of legs and fangs and hair. Twenty-six. Legs, legs, legs. On instinct, I turned to retreat the way we'd come, any direction away from the massive spider queen. But the passage was already blocked with both strands of heavy webbing and fat spider bodies. There was no going back. These things had herded Cutter and me into this hollow with the express intention of sacrificing us as an offering to their disgusting matriarch. They certainly had no intention of letting us slip away now. Cutter seemed to come to the same realization, his normal cocky smile gone, his jaw tight,
his eyes filled with a claustrophobic terror.
"This way!"
he shouted, bolting right, heading for a small undefended gap in the tree line. A bloated spider, larger than a beefy Rottweiler, sensed Cutter's trajectory and scuttled to intercept while more of its hairy-legged kin pushed in around us. Cutter, always one for dramatics, leapt into the air like an acrobat, twisting and turning in a graceful flip before landing on top of the spider's swollen thorax, sinking both of his daggers through the chitinous flesh, driving the blades down to the hilt. Green blood, sludgy and putrid, bubbled up as the spider underling reared back in pain, thrashing left and right in an attempt to throw the thief. With its front legs up and waving manically in the air, its soft underbelly was temporarily exposed, an easy target I didn't want to squander. I sprinted forward, canting my weapon to the side as I ran. I closed the distance in a few long strides and lashed out, driving the hammer face forward and up, battering into the spider's sensitive underside like a wrecking ball of steel. The blow smashed through the creature's brown flesh, sinking in with a spurt of green goo. The creature convulsed as I tore my weapon free, its belly ruptured under the sudden strain, a mass of glistening gray intestines spilling from the ugly wound and onto the ground. The spiderkin let out a final shriek of rage and pain before collapsing. Dead. Unfortunately, that creature was only the tip of a giant, horrific, many-legged iceberg.
"Cutter! Keep going!"
I hollered, wheeling around to face the rest of the incoming spiderkin.
"Don't worry about me!"
I screamed as I lunged forward, thrusting my weapon upward at an angle, sinking the spiked top into an encroaching spider.
"Just keep going!"
I didn't know if he was behind me or not, and I couldn't spare even a single second to check, but I sure hoped he'd taken my words to heart. Obviously, I wasn't too keen on experiencing death by spider. After all, spiders were well known for stringing their victims up before sucking them dry like a juice box. But, no matter how terrible the death, I would respond. Cutter wouldn't. I shuffled back a few paces and turned my mind fully back to the brawl as three more spiders converged on me. I shifted right and brought up my buckler as a spider lunged in, curved fangs flashing out. I bashed the creature in the mouth with the tiny shield, absorbing the damage, before stepping through, swinging my hammer into the side of the creature's head. Its skull caved in, its eyes flashing momentarily before going dull and lifeless. Unfortunately, the maneuver opened me up on the right, leaving my back partially exposed and vulnerable. Another of the spiderkin seized the opportunity, charging me in an eye blink. A heavy body slammed into my side, knocking me sideways as a pair of fangs, like butcher knives, sank into my chest. I screamed and thrashed, bringing a knee up into the spiderkin's jaw, knocking it back a step as I twirled my warhammer, bringing it down on top of the spider's skull, using it like a sledgehammer to drive a stake into the ground. I unleashed savage blow, and the spider's head exploded like a rotten pumpkin. Shards of bone, strings of gristle, and gelatinous green blood splattered everywhere. I grimaced and backpedaled, clutching at the puncture wounds in my chest, which were making it terribly difficult to breathe. A combat notice flashed in my peripheral vision.
"Debuffs added. Punctured lung. You have suffered a punctured lung. Stamina regeneration reduced by 15% for 5 minutes.
Orb Weaver poison. You have been poisoned. 1 HP per sec. Duration. 10 minutes or until cured."
Crap. That wasn't good. The DPS on the poison was relatively low, 60 points a minute, but over 10 minutes, that cost me 600 HP, far more than I had even at full health, and I wasn't anywhere close to full health. I stole a glance over my shoulder. The narrow opening in the trees was still clear, though Cutter was nowhere to be seen. And backtracked in a slow retreat, still clenching at the puncture wounds, feeling my life and strength leak away one ragged breath at a time. I wasn't optimistic about my chances. These spiderkin were tough and vicious, and the few I'd managed to put down were hardly a drop in the bucket. I caught sudden movement on my left and wheeled just in time to get blasted with a stream of sticky webbing. Yet another debuff.
Debuff added. Snared. You have been snared by web vomit, slowing your movement by 50%. Duration, 3 minutes.
I fought at the gossamer material binding my legs and clinging to my arms, working to tear my way free of the stuff even as I shuffled toward the tree line at a snail's pace. A loose ring of the spiderkin were now arrayed before me in a horseshoe. But, instead of charging me, they bided their time, waiting for something. A moment later, I found out what. One of the shifty, long-legged jerks had strung up a trip line of spider silk directly behind me. My already tangled feet caught on the taut line, and suddenly I was falling, arms flailing as I fought to keep upright. A useless effort. I hit with an oomph of expelled air, landing near the stinking corpse of the first spider Cutter and I had managed to take down. The horde of spiderkin didn't waste a heartbeat, rushing in, jostling each other in order to get first crack at me. A particularly beefy sucker won the battle and scampered over me. I expected it to strike in an instant and send me for respawn, but instead, it repositioned its bloated belly and began to blast my feet with a thick stream of webbing. I began to panic, recalling the words of the Spider Queen.
Catch them! String them up, but keep them alive. The younglings will need living flesh and hot blood to feast on when they hatch.
It was cocooning me, preparing me for later consumption. Oh my god, this game was awful! Osmark Technologies was lucky players were stuck in VGO permanently, or they would have had a slew of lawsuits on their hands, filed by traumatized players who would never have a peaceful night's sleep again. The creature's abdomen continued to pulse, swelling and contracting as it spewed ever more webbing onto my body, working its way up my legs. At this point, I was thinking the poison coursing through my veins was actually a blessing. If I didn't do anything to stop it, the poison would kill me, which was the best option. Still, I couldn't just lie there, waiting to die. So I raised my hammer,